Open in your Bibles real quickly, if you would, to the book of Nehemiah. If you're wondering where Nehemiah is, it's just before Esther. Right after Ezra. That was the three amigos, Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther. If you still don't know where it's at, go to the middle of your Bible and there's Psalms, turn left and just flip. 535, okay. It's on page 535. Of course, I'm on 403. I want to share just a little bit this morning. Been here for 25 years now. This year was my 25th year, Father's Day. And sometimes people say, well, what's the church doing? Where's it going? What's your vision for the church? My vision hadn't changed from the very first day. It's been the very same. And a couple of the things that Paul touched on this morning, that's a part of my vision. But I'm looking for a church where people can come and find peace, where they can find joy, where they can fit in. They don't feel like they have to be perfect. Because I don't know if you've looked lately, but you ain't perfect. Just in case you were under some kind of illusion, you're not perfect. And if you're looking for the perfect church, don't go there because you'll mess it up. There's no perfect church and there's no perfect Christians. There was one, and he was crucified for me and you. But I'm looking to have a church where people can come and just worship God, and they can receive and they can grow. And they can be blessed. Where they might have had financial problems, because of their exposure here, they start learning truths and receive blessings. And they're not having financial problems anymore because of the blessings that God's giving. And I'm seeing that over and over and over. Over this 25 years, we've had people come that was homeless and destitute, and in a matter of a year or so, they're prospering and they're being blessed by God. That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a place where we have young people that will lay on their face and cry out to God until God moves on their behalf. And I see that over and over. Oh, it comes in waves, but I'm seeing God move in the hearts of our young people. I know that in other places, other churches, things are difficult. I know that, and sometimes I get a little worried because. God blesses us so much, and He pours out His Spirit so strong, and I think it's because we pray and we seek Him to do that. I wanna have a church where the older generation feels like they're a part, and they give and they put in to. Those that are coming up behind them because they have wisdom and they know how to pray and they teach others by their example what it is to call on God, believe God, and walk with God. Where young couples can come and get their roots deep in the Word of God that'll last them for the rest of their life. Where their children can become involved and they can feel safe about their children being a part of our church. Those are the kind of things that I'm looking for. A place where the sick can come and be healed, and those that are bound can be loosed. And that's the kind of church that I'm looking for. It hadn't changed from day one, but some people just kind of get sideways and get discontent. And they say, well, it's not going good enough. It's not going fast enough. Preacher, what are you doing? And I usually look at them and smile and say, I'm just moving on with Jesus. You want to come? You got to change your ways. Get rid of that grumpy attitude. You know, if God would heal us from our grumpy attitude, most of us would be so much happier. Of course, we wouldn't know what to do. Some of you have made friends of grumpiness. And you just wouldn't know how to act if you didn't have something to gripe about. Oh, I'm not talking to anybody here. No. Don't you start looking around saying, oh, he's got her, yeah. No, I'm not talking about anybody here. I'm talking about those that aren't here. I want to just share a little bit. I'll get started today, and I'm pretty sure I won't get finished because they got me 25 minutes and 15 seconds. Can't be done. I liked it whenever we first started service, had an hour and 27 minutes. I could have handled that one, but 25 now. I want to preach a little bit on spiritual workers need spiritual wisdom. If you're trying to do the things of God without His wisdom, You're going to be shocked because it's not going to go real well. God is so far beyond us. His ways are not our ways. And we can't use common sense because God is above that. But He will give you wisdom if you'll come to Him and ask. It says in James, if any man lacks wisdom, let him come to God and ask, and He will give liberally to those who ask. So I'm using a friend of mine as an example. His name is Nehemiah. And Nehemiah and I have become very good friends over the 40 some odd years of my ministry. I like this guy. He's all business. He gets things done. He was a statesman, a statesman's statesman. He was at the right hand of the king. He was in a prisoner. He was in bondage. But yet he had the king's ear, and the king liked this guy too. So let's look at something that was going on. The walls of Jerusalem had been torn down and the gates had been burned. They had been ravaged. And there had been year after year after year, many years had passed, that the city lied in ruin and the temple of God was in disarray. Nehemiah's heart was touched with this, so much so that he was saddened deeply. And the king saw him and said, what's wrong, buddy? That's Lewis' version. It doesn't quite say that in the King James, but similar. And Nehemiah said, how can I be happy when the city of God lies in waste and people are hurting? And the king says, well, why don't you get some things together and go and repair the place? Nehemiah was excited about that. So he gets a group of people and they go to rebuild the walls. Ezra was working at the temple site. But Nehemiah, he wanted the walls fixed. Now there was a lot of people around, and they began to stir up trouble and make fun and mock. And that's kind of where we picked up right here. Chapter 4, verses 1 through 6. When Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became angry and was greatly incensed. He ridiculed the Jews, and in the presence of his associates and the army of Samaria, he said, what are those feeble Jews doing? Will they restore their wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they finish in a day? Can they bring the stones back to life from those heaps of rubble, burned as they are? And Tobiah the Ammonite, who was at his side, said, what they are building, even a fox climbing on it would break it down, break down their walls of stone. When Nehemiah and the others heard this, in verse 4, they begin to cry out to God, hear us, O God, for we are despised. Turn their insults back on their own heads. Give them over as plunder in the land of captivity. Do not cover up their guilt or blot out their sins from your sight. For they have thrown insults into the face of the builders. For we build the wall till all of it reached half its height. For the people worked with all of their hearts. In the face of the enemy, if we want to get things done, it's going to take all of us, and we're going to have to work with all of our hearts. And no matter what the resistance, we can overcome that. Now, Satan is attacking our young people, attacking our senior citizens, the young couples. There's open season on some of you that are sitting in here. Satan has come against you. He's fighting against you. But I'm telling you, you can overcome. And you can do anything that God has asked you to do when you just walk with him and you use his wisdom. So I want to talk for just a little bit about spiritual workers need spiritual wisdom. Nehemiah and his men are engaged in a very serious work. In fact, the future of Jerusalem, of Israel itself, depends on the successful completion of their project. They hold the fate of Jerusalem and the Israeli people in their hands. As they labor, they provide a valuable illustration for those that are engaged in the work of the Lord in these days, here in our church or in other churches. As you know, First Assembly of God is facing a great task. God has strategically placed us in this neighborhood. Doors are opening up. Things are getting done. The prayer walk by the men's ministry that Brother Doug and others are leading, that is putting everything back into perspective. And God is able to use that, and victories are being put in place even now. Things like the VBS that's starting this week, we're going to see so many young lives changed. We need workers. We need laborers in that harvest field. Our church is facing a great task. It has not changed, and it has not gotten any easier. And I don't want to place undue pressure on you. But listen to me carefully. The very future of this church depends on the successful completion of the task that's at hand. I am thankful that God has not left you and me without a work in these perilous and difficult days. America is not going toward God. America is going away from God. And it's getting harder and harder and harder on churches. There are those churches that they use lights and glitz and glamour, and it works for a little while. But I want the truth to go out, and I want mercy to be extended, and I want blessing to flow. I want God to be the leader of this church and the task that we have to do. The very future of that task is dependent on me and you. And the Lord has not left us without something to do. He's given us a job, and He's given you a place in this church, or a job in this church, if you will. This passage that we just read, it points out some very precious information for those who desire to see that the work of the Lord is done. This is how to get it done. This is how to do it. So allow me to point out just a few thoughts as we look at the subject of spiritual workers need spiritual wisdom. And I pray that this passage, this message, will aid you, will propel you into the Lord's work for the will of God in this church. Notice what wise spiritual workers do. So point one, there was danger all around them and they knew it. So the danger around them, that's point one. These workers had to fight criticism, and they fought criticism. In verses 1 through 3, we read about it. When Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became angry and very incensed. He ridiculed the Jews, and in the presence of his associates in the army of Samaria, he began to ridicule and revile them. What are these feeble Jews doing? Will they restore their wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they finish in a day? Can they bring the stones back to life from the heap of burned rubble as they are? Tobiah the Ammonite joins in the fray. He was standing right there. What they are building, a fox could break down just by walking on it. You start something for God, and it brings out the bugs in the woodwork. The enemies of Israel mocked and ridiculed the work that this group was doing. You will face that. Anytime you're determined to do something for God, there will always be those that are ready to ridicule you. They're not going to help you, but they will point fingers and ridicule you. They'll whisper behind your back. They don't know what they're doing. They're just making a mess out of everything. They're spending money. That's all they're doing. They know how to do it better. And they would do it much differently. Or they wouldn't do anything at all. Most of the time. Don't let that crowd get to you. Just go on for God. Don't let them be a weight that you have to pull through life. Just go on for God. Some of the Lord's great workers, like Paul and Jesus and others, Peter, they were all criticized. There's plenty of critics. So when you're criticized, just put your chest out, praise the Lord, and go on, because you're in great company. Anybody that's ever attempted anything for God has been criticized. I like what Dale Carnegie said. He said, any fool can criticize, condemn, and complain. And most of them do. You'll catch that about 2 o'clock this afternoon. Think about it. Anybody can criticize, condemn, and complain. And most of them do. An officer on the battlefield, he aimed his cannon toward what he thought was the distant enemy. And he spent a little while honing it in. And he was pretty sure that he had it right. But there was another officer. His commander was standing there. And he was looking through the field glasses out toward where the cannon was aimed. And suddenly he said, stop. Those are your own people. You've got a perfect aim, but you're pointing at the wrong crowd. Don't pull the trigger. Did you ever think that when you're aiming your criticism, and you're aiming your criticism at the people of God, and you're doing it so thoughtlessly that you're actually aiming your cannon at the Lord of your brethren? It's God that you're ridiculing. It's God that you're complaining about. These people had to fight conspiracy. So point two is, or B is, they fought conspiracy. Look at verse 7 and 8 of chapter 4 of Nehemiah. But when Sanballat and Tobiah, the Arabs and the Ammonites and the people of Ashdod heard that the repairs of Jerusalem's wall had gone ahead and that their gaps were being closed, they were very angry, and they all plotted together. to come and fight against Jerusalem and stir up trouble against them. So they had a little confab. They said, wait a minute, this thing's going ahead. This thing's doing good. They're going to repair this wall. We better do something about that. So we're going to go and fight and stir up trouble amongst all of the Jews. The enemy plotted and planned how they might bring about the demise of this group that was working so diligently. The church has and will. This church has and will again come under attack of that enemy. They don't care how they stop, as long as they can stop you, as long as they can hinder the work. They don't want it going forward. They don't want the walls to be rebuilt. They don't want the worship to be good. They don't want you and I to succeed. I know that sounds crazy, but you think you've seen it yourself. There's been griping. There's been undercutting all the way through. And it's not just at this church. Any church that's doing anything for God, any Christians that are working for Him, you come under attack. But Jesus said, don't pay them any attention. They resisted me, they're going to resist you. They came against me, they're going to come against you. This church has come under the attack of the enemy. In truth, many times. But that should not surprise you. 1 Peter 5:8 says, be alert and be sober-minded. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. So you should always be aware of those who would love nothing more, nothing better than for you to fail, because they failed. There will be those who are on the outside that will plot against you, but there's also going to be some on the inside that will plot against you. And by their actions, they'll do anything that they can to hinder you, to stop you. You might be starting up a little ministry. There'll be somebody that'll say, oh, that won't work here. You can't do that. Nah, that's over before it begins. You might want to get a group together and start doing something for the community or for the shut-in or whatever. There'll be those that'll tell you, you can't do that. You're going to fail. Don't even attempt it. Don't listen to them. You be obedient to God and do what He's laid upon your heart. So there'll be some outside and there'll be some inside, and they'll always try to hinder. Be on your guard. When I was in the Boy Scouts, our motto was be prepared. Be prepared. And Mr. King would say, be prepared for anything. And usually anything would happen. We went out camping on the north side of Clewiston, right on the edge of the Lake Okeechobee, in what we call the jungle. And we're setting up camp, and this bear is just over there about 50 yards away. And that black bear stood up and looked at us and growled. Every one of us kids wanted to run. Mr. King said, it's okay. I got him taken care of. And in a few minutes, the bear was gone. So was Mr. King, but the bear was gone. He came back. And he had a potion stuff that he had mixed up. And he had it in a sprayer. And he had sprayed that bear. And he looked at us and he says, be prepared, boys. But he never would tell us what was in the stuff. So I don't know to this day. I can't chase any bears. Because I don't have the potion. That night, we're laying there, and a panther screams. If you've ever heard a panther scream in the middle of the night when you're 12 years old, son, you just ain't lived. That will make your entire life pass before you. And when you're 12, you don't have much to pass before you. It's real quick, just, and it's over. And you think you're over. There was one night, me and Mike Brantley, my best friend, Lee Ford, one of my cousins, we were camping out up in the jungle, just the three of us. And we all had jungle hammocks. And we were sitting around the fire throwing cans of pork and beans in the fire to let them explode. Anything for entertainment. And hot beans would fly out. And if one hit you, it was going to burn you bad. But about that time, a panther screamed. And it was pretty close. We all throwed wood on the fire, made it big, and that panther screamed again. And we made the fire bigger. And I said, well, I'm going to get in my hammock. And Mike says, I'm getting in the hammock with you. And Lee got in his hammock. And we zipped it up and had the skeeter nets on it and everything. And my dog, Tippy, was with us. And we could see Tippy walking around. And suddenly she turned and took off. I said, oh, Lord, that panther's right there. That panther's going to get one of us. I know that panther's going to get one of us. Don't move, Mike. And Mike said, I'm not even breathing. It was about 185 degrees in that thing. And we're sweating. And we're not breathing. And we're not moving. And we're laying there trembling. And about that time, Tippy comes from in back of us and walks under the hammock, and his tail hit me about three times, and I tore that thing up. I came out of that hammock. I mean, I tore everything off from it. And Mike said, Mr. King said, be prepared. What are you doing? You need to be prepared. And I said, I am. I'm prepared to run all the way to the road. I'm getting out of here. I don't know why I told that. Those of you who are watching over your computer, just don't pay any attention to it. There was that conspiracy. There was that guys that were coming against them. The enemy wants to attack. And it'll attack your work. It's another thing when that enemy is on the inside and begins to attack you from inside. We need to stand against that. Fight against those complaints. That's C. Fight against complaints. In verse 10 and 12, it says, "Meanwhile, the people in Judah said, 'The strength of the laborers are giving out.'" We got them right where we want them. They're giving out. "And there is so much rubble that they can't rebuild the wall. Also, our enemies said, 'Before they know it or see us, we're going to be right there among them, and we'll kill them and put an end to this work.' Then the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times over, 'Wherever you turn, they will attack us.' From within and without, the attack will come." That's what happened to Nehemiah and those who were working. So be aware that there's going to arise within your own ranks from some of your friends. They're not going to be satisfied until they can stop you. Some people can't find a good word to say about anything. And they're not going to say good things about you. What do? We just keep on walking. Keep on working. Keep on pleasing Jesus. Keep on smiling. You know, one of the greatest tools that you've got in your arsenal of tools is your smile. When somebody is upset with you and they're coming against you, just stand there and smile at them. It will drive them crazy. Why are they smiling like that? Wipe that stupid smile off your face. It will bother them. There was a father who was a chronic grouch. I mean, he was... Rah, 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 rah. Some of y'all know exactly what I'm talking about. He was sitting with his family in the presence of guests, and they were sitting in the living room one day, and question came up about food and who liked what and what kind of food they really enjoyed. One of the children, a little girl, she was telling the guest just openly what foods each member of the family liked. And finally it came, she had described what mama liked and what her brother liked and what her sister liked and what she liked. And then it was her father's time. And when it came his turn, said, what does he like? And she laughingly, kind of sheepishly, said, well, he don't like nothing. He's never liked anything. He's always griping about it. Wouldn't that be awful to hear your daughter say about you? It's like the little boy sitting at the table. He was about 4 years old. He had never said anything, never talked. His mom and dad had carried him to specialists. The doctors would examine him. We don't find anything wrong with him. Then one morning, sitting at the breakfast table, the little boy looked up and he said, "Mom, the toast is burnt." And she was shocked. She said, "You talked. You talked. You said something. Why haven't you said anything before? He said, well, up to now, everything's been pretty good. Your efforts and your motives will be brought into question. And I'm going to close out with this, because this is point one, and I had to get all of this laid out. Everything that you are trying to do will be scrutinized. Fingers will be pointed. You will be told you can't. But listen, you can. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Somebody will tell you that you can't straighten up your life, that you can't serve God. Somebody will tell you that you can never be happy. You can never have joy. Somebody will make it their job to let you know in their scrutiny of you that you just can't do it. I'm here to tell you, and I'm asking you to remember that your duty is not to please the critics, but to please the Lord. And do everything that you can do to please Him. You say, why are you telling us this? I'm preparing you. Because that time's coming. It's been here, but it's coming. Because God is going to be asking us to do some big things, some important things. He's opening doors of opportunity throughout this community. And He's asking us to walk through those doors. And there's going to be those that will tell you, you're not going to be able to do it. You're going to fall flat on your face, and you're going to make a fool out of yourself. I'm here to tell you, you go on and please God. You do what God is wanting you to do. There's so many things I want to tell you. God is showing me some things. He's going to use you, each one of you. Your duty is to please God. Don't listen to the advice of complainers. The man who says it can't be done should never interrupt the man who is actually doing it. That how true that is. If you don't think it can be done, leave that person alone that's doing it. I remember my first church. It was a very small church. 15 people, 8 members. It was 8 years old. The three previous pastors to me had lasted an average of about a month and a half, and they were run off. One of them ended up in the ditch. He was so shook up that he ran out of the service, jumped in his car, and ran into the ditch. When I first went there, of course, I was green as a gourd and still wet behind the ears and dumb as dirt. And a fellow named Shelton Smith, who was a friend of Susan and I, he had come in down to Florida and he had run us a revival, and now we're up in South Georgia and I'm taking this little church, and I go to my first minister's meeting and Shelton is there, and he looks at me and he says, Barney? And I said, yeah. He said, what are you doing up here? I said, I took a church. He said, oh my God. You didn't take Faith Tabernacle. And I said, yeah. He said, Lord, they eat preachers for breakfast over there. You'll never be able to make it. You've heard some of the stories. You know some of the things that happened. And yes, they took a couple of bites out of me. I felt gnawed on. But after about 3 months, we were running 35. And then on a Wednesday night, all of them walked out, except Susan and Sister Hope. By the next Sunday, that was Wednesday. The next Sunday, there was 45 people there, and none of the 35 that walked out on me. The next Sunday, they called and said, "Can we come back?" And I said, "I don't know if you'll find a place to sit." They said, "What? I know you're struggling." I said, "No, we're not struggling. We're busting at the seams. So you'll probably have to stand up, but you can come back." So in 2 weeks' time, we went from 35 to zero or two to 60 in 2 weeks. God just blew the doors off that place. We had to open the windows, and we had people sitting on a scaffold outside looking through the windows. Shelton came by. He saw everything that we had put up on the outside, and he said, "What's that for?" I said, "That's for people to sit on." He said, "What people?" I said, "The people that's coming to church." He said, "You got that many?" I said, "Oh man, God is blowing the doors off this place." And he said, "I never dreamed that you'd be able to make it here." And I said, "I know that, but God did. And he sent Susan and I here because there's people in this town that need to know that Jesus is alive and that he can do anything. I'm here to tell you, Jesus is alive and he can do anything." Bow your heads with me, would you please? Father,